Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 142 and a half. Brought to you by the fine folks at Freshly. How you doing? My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me. He is still trying to thaw out up there in the chilly, chilly cold that is Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. He was on site for tonight's UFC on Fox 26 event, which turned out to be a lot of fun. I was back home watching in my office here in Las Vegas and really enjoyed it. You know, certainly the type of card that would have been fun to attend in person, but I sure as hell wasn't dealing with that cold weather up there. How about you? Amazing performance from Rafael dos Anjos in the night's main event, picking up a 50-45 win on all three judges' cards over Robbie Lawler. I got to say, I thought this was just an amazing performance by Rafael dos Anjos. You know, I picked him coming into this fight, but, I thought it was a coin flip type of fight. We know what a dangerous fighter Robbie Lawler is, and, going in there that, anything can happen. That's for damn sure when you're facing a guy that hits as hard as Robbie Lawler. And I thought Rafael dos Anjos looked like the real deal tonight. I really did. I think he has proven himself a legitimate contender at 170 pounds. Proven that he belongs in that division, because I got to be honest, I wasn't always so sure about that. You know, he decided to make the move. Listen, it made sense that he made the move. The guy was killing himself on these weight cuts, right? I mean, notoriously bad weight cuts down to 155 pounds. And he said, listen, man, I just can't keep doing this to myself. And, you know, the people around him were like, it's not good. But, you know, as short as he is at his size, you know, like 5'9", I think he's listed at, you know, I felt like 170 pounds was going to be very problematic, but I think he's proven that's just not the case. I mean, he's fought some, you know, rangy, lengthy fighters in Tarek Saffiedine and Neil Magny, and now he's facing one of the heaviest hitters in the division and stood right there toe-to-toe with them. I think he's definitely proven that he's the real deal at 170 pounds, and, you know, also said tonight that it not just the physical, the mental, too, is so much better. He feels so much more motivated, you know, knowing that he doesn't have that nasty weight cut to deal with. And I thought this was a fantastic performance. I think, we know that Robbie Lawler was certainly not 100%. You know, you could hear him. One advantage, I think, sometimes, you know, obviously I enjoy attending cards and watching either from cage side or backstage when I'm working. But, you know, when you're watching from home, you get that corner audio that we don't always get on fight night. And it was kind of cool to hear. Cool might be the wrong word considering we're talking about an injury, but you definitely knew that there was something wrong with Robbie Lawler, the way he was talking to his team, and, you know, you very clearly saying there's something wrong with my knee, you know, it planted in a weird way, whatever the exact words that he said. So we know that Lawler was dealing with an injury, but I'd hate for that to be some kind of an excuse or a reason to write off Rafael dos Anjos' performance. I think that would be a huge mistake. Did it contribute to the fact that it was 50-45? Probably. You know, Robbie Lawler was definitely not fighting at 100% for the last couple of rounds. But I don't think that should take away from the performance that Rafael dos Anjos had. And I had the fight scored all five rounds for Rafael dos Anjos as well. I know watching the post-fight talk, you know, some of the folks on the official UFC post-fight show there were saying they didn't score it that way. But I thought it was a clean sweep for Rafael dos Anjos. And I think Robbie Lawler deserves a lot of credit, man. The guy was doing the best he could, man. He was still throwing bombs and, you know, trying to find a way to get something done, even though he was hopping around on one leg, or hell, maybe even neither leg was working properly with the damage he was taking. I mean, hell, you know, Rafael dos Anjos was limping to the press conference and getting carted around on a dolly by Jason Perillo, and he was the one giving the leg kicks, and even he was hurting. So that should tell you the type of pain that was going through both those guys. But just a solid performance from start to finish. And no question about it for me, man. Rafael dos Anjos is the number one contender in the welterweight division. You know, him versus Tyron Woodley, that's the fight I want to see right now. It really is. You know, I kind of talked coming into this that maybe you could do the Covington fight, you know, especially with Tyron Woodley, you know, being on the sidelines with the shoulder injury. You know, maybe you could do Covington and Woodley as coaches on The Ultimate Fighter and then have them meet at the end. I want to see RDA now. After that performance, I want to see RDA. And I don't know. I guess maybe it never crossed my mind that there could be, performance like this that would make me say, that's the one I got to see. I kind of thought about, the rivalry, the business aspect of Colby Covington and how much fun that might be to sell. And you could still do as coaches of the Ultimate Fighter. You just do Rafael dos Anjos as well. Now, would that be as good a TV as Colby Covington being on there? No, absolutely not. It would not be. And that's no offense to Rafael dos Anjos. I mean, he'll just tell you, I'm not a big talker. I'm not somebody that's going to talk trash. I'm not out here trying to sell fights. I think you could still go the Ultimate Fighter coaches. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if that's the plan, but you could still do it, and that would give Tyron Woodley plenty of time to heal up from his shoulder injury. I'm sure he'd be doing, rehab out here in Las Vegas anyway, at the Performance Institute. So, why wouldn't you have him do the Ultimate Fighter? So I think it makes sense. I don't know that it would be as good as TV. I respect Colby Covington. Colby Covington took to Twitter. Look, I'm a Colby Covington fan, man. I like his shtick. I think sometimes it goes too far, no question about it. But I like the guy. He's trying to make waves, and I can respect that. He's gotten himself noticed, that's for sure, and I can respect him for that. But him saying that wasn't a great performance, you couldn't finish Lawler, he dropped the filthy animals line trying to rile up Rafael dos Anjos, and Rafael did not take the bait. He said, listen, that's I don't even want to talk about that guy. So I respect Colby Covington for taking the shot, but for me right now, for my money, I want to see RDA versus Tyron Woodley. So I think that's definitely the fight to make, and hopefully that'll happen. Again, we're gonna have to wait for Lawler. We're gonna have to wait for Woodley to get cleared with his shoulder. But I think certainly we'll be seeing that fight in 2018. At least I hope we will. I think it's clear cut. There were no UFC officials speaking to the media afterwards. I don't think Dana White was even there. I could be wrong, but he did not speak to the media. And Dave Shaw, who actually sometimes speaks to the media, he didn't stop by the press conference either. So, there was nobody even to bounce that question off to see if they thought about it. But, maybe we can talk to Dana here in the next couple weeks ahead of UFC 219. The one other thing about this main event, I guess the question, should the corner stopped it? I saw some people saying that, and I am a believer that the corner should probably stop fights more often than they do in MMA. You see it a lot in boxing, and you just don't ever see it in MMA, to be honest with you. It's just not something that's commonplace. But I'll be honest, I didn't feel like it was necessary here. Lawler wasn't taking just completely unnecessary abuse. I mean, was he taking some shots? Yeah, he was. But it wasn't like he's getting dropped over and over and just busted up badly. No, he was taking some shots. Rafael dos Anjos is a cardio machine, man, just nonstop. And it looked pretty clear to me how this fight was going to happen. But Lawler, man, he throws bombs, and if he connects, things can change. So I didn't have an issue with them not stopping the fight. I could see how somebody might want that fight waved off by the corner, but I was okay with it. I was okay with it. So overall, to me, man, I thought this was a fantastic main event, and I just give all the credit in the world to Rafael dos Anjos, man. The dude just keeps proving the doubters wrong and just seems to be getting better and better. And man, again, the real deal at 170 pounds. He spoke to the media afterwards, pretty satisfied with his performance, even though it was a little banged up, and made his case for why he thinks he deserves the title shot next. So here's what Rafael dos Anjos had to say at the post-fight press conference.
Hey, Rafael, right here in front of you. Congratulations on the win. We see you limping in here. Can you tell us what happened? Did you suffer a serious injury or anything in the fight, or is it just from all the kicks and stuff?
Nah, just the kick and stuff, just sore. And it was a 25-minute war. I threw several leg kicks, body kicks, and just some bruise.
Yeah, and just what do you think of your performance tonight? I mean, I think, a lot of people thought it was going to be a close fight coming in, but you won every single round. Did you expect to be that dominant in there, or did you think maybe it was going to be a little more competitive?
Yeah, I trained for it, I trained to have that, to have a dominance performance, and that's what I'm training for, and I'm not surprised. And I know I did enough at the gym every day, and I'm just on my way for my second belt.
Yeah, and Robbie came in here limping as well, and he didn't say much. He didn't tell us exactly what happened in the fight. But did you sense at some point in the fight that you hurt his leg? Was it maybe from one of the kicks, from something else? Did you realize anything in there as far as that?
Yeah, I feel that part of my game was I knew he had like strong punches, good boxing. Part of my game was, my strategy was kill the legs, so he will not be able to throw as hard as he usually do, and he's not going to have the good footwork. So the leg kicks was part of my strategy.
And it seemed like he was barely able to stand for, you know, the maybe last round or so. Did you feel that you would be able to put him away at that point, or were you, you know, not sensing that you had him close to a finish?
Yeah, I felt that I need to go back home and watch the fight, but I feel I was close to finishing him, I think, on the second or the third, but my hands are hurting because of his head. He got a pretty tough head, and he's a tough guy, former champion. And, of course, he was a bigger man tonight, but, you know, I just feel strong too, you know. And, yeah, I feel that I got close to the finish, but he's so durable.
And your hands looked excellent tonight, too. How much credit do you give to Jason Perillo for just the improvement in your boxing?
Yeah, man, I have I put together a great team, you know, good friends and you know, and good people, good coaches around me. I have that was a combination of everything. I have Jason Perillo, I have Eduardo Pamplona, my Muay Thai coach too. So I play a lot on the clinch too. So that helped me to take out his gas. And I've been working my hands with Jason too. You know, my jiu-jitsu with my old friend, Felipe Della Monica, Bubba Jenkins, my wrestling. So I think I put on a great show. I show my skills everywhere. You know, my boxing skills, my Muay Thai skills, my knees, my takedowns, my jiu-jitsu, you know, my top game. That was a good performance.
Yeah, and last thing, I know you were just on the Fox set with Tyron Woodley. We weren't able to watch it, obviously, because we're in here. Can you tell us what happened up there with him? Did, you know, what kind of interaction do you guys have? And do you feel after that you are going to get the title shot next?
Yeah, I hope so. I told him that I had to tell him face to face that I'm not interested in his Gucci belt. I wanted that UFC gold belt. And Gucci belt, I can buy one if I want. It's not my tasty, but I want that gold belt.
Did he say anything to you? Like, do you feel like he wants to fight?
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, do you feel like he wants to fight you next, though? Or we know he's getting surgery and stuff, so what do you think happens?
Yeah, I can. I'm able to wait for him. You know, I think I did enough on that division to deserve the title shot. And, you know, and I'm not a guy that talks so much, try to get a title shot because I'm talking bad about people, you know, cursing people. I just go there and do a great performance like I did tonight. And, you know, I hope so. Dana White said that, and that's what I hope.
Rafael, congratulations on the win tonight. I thought that was one of your best performances ever. How would you rank that performance versus some of the other ones you've had in the past?
Yeah, I need to go back home and watch the fight. You know, Rob is a very durable guy. And, of course, he was a bigger man tonight, but, you know, I just felt strong. You know, I stepped on that cage with 181, 182 pounds, just my normal weight. You know, I'm not carrying extra weight and just feel good. And I was able to push hard the fight, push the pace. And he was strong, but, you know, just happy, put a great guys behind me. Good people, you know, like been working hard. This guy helping me become a better fighter every day.
It's amazing to see how many people online are still so surprised at what you've been able to do at welterweight. Are you surprising yourself?
No, man. You know, people forget. Most of the people on MMA fans, they have a very short memory. You know, people remember you because of your last performance. They don't remember your whole career. And I never had an easier path to get on the lightweight belt. I'm not going to have an easier path to get on the welterweight belt. I'm not the guy that talk much. I don't curse people. I just go there and work. And, you know, I feel that I'm 33 years old, and I feel that I'm getting mature. I feel in a way better shape than I was 25. But, you know, I just, like, I feel that I was getting so drained to drop the weight to 55, so I couldn't perform at my best. And welterweight, I still feel that my body's making some adjustments, but I feel I'm getting there.
If Tyron is going to be out for a while with the shoulder injury, which may require surgery, would you take a fight in the interim, or would you perhaps just wait it out if you get the title shot?
just beat a former champion. Dana White said whoever wins the fight will fight for the belt. You know, that was my third fight in 6 months. And I've been in fight camp for the last 6 months. Like, just fight camp, straight. And I need some time off too. Time to go back home, you know, get better, you know, and have a, like, a little longer camp to prepare for a title fight. So if he get a, I hope he get the surgery done, because he was about to have a surgery to fight some other guy, but he was about to fight Diaz. So he said he don't need surgery to fight one guy, but he needs surgery to fight a different guy. I don't get it, but yeah, I'm willing to wait.
I just want to read to you a message that Colby Covington put on Twitter aimed at you, and I want to get your reply to this. This is from Colby Covington. He says, "Sad performance by the JV squad on Fox for UFC Winnipeg. RDA couldn't even finish a broken old man. Tyron's faking injuries. I'm here to make this division great again. Rafael Dos Anjos, step up and defend that dump you call home and fight me for the interim title." What do you make of that?
I have no comments about that guy, man. That guy has 6,000 followers on Twitter. He's just talking crap about people. And he showed nothing on the division. He beat nobody. He beat Demian Maia, but Demian Maia looked really bad when he fought Demian. And I have no comments on that guy.
Okay, and just one more from me, Rafael, right here. Obviously, you're going for the title shot versus Tyron Woodley. If you do get that fight, how do you beat him, and what are you able to do that his previous opponents, you know, during this title reign haven't done?
Yeah, I think when he fought Demian, he was worried about takedowns only, you know. And when he fought Wonderboy, he was worried only about stand-up. I think with me, he got to worry about everywhere. I'm going to kick him, I'm going to wrestle him, I'm going to, you know, try to take him down, I'm going to box him. He's going to have a lot of things to worry about.
Thank you. Congrats again.
You're welcome.
Rafael, do you see, when you look back at 2016 and then you look at where you are now, do you see yourself where you are at this moment?
Sorry, can you say it again?
Yeah, after 2016 and not winning that year, and then coming into 2017 and going up a weight division, winning three straight, did you kind of foresee this at the end of this time last year?
Yeah, man, I had two losses last year. Tonight was my third win this in 2017. I move up a weight division, and as long I still believe I can become a champion, I'll keep fighting. You know, as long as I still believe I can be the best, I'll keep fighting. By the time that I don't believe I can be the best anymore, I will retire. And I still believe I can be champion, I can be the best.
Do you feel yourself, sorry
guys.
Do you feel that you're more focused now than you may have been in the past? I mean, tonight looked maybe one of your most complete performances. How do you kind of see that?
Yeah, I think it's just physically, man. Mentally, too. I feel better, and I'm not killing myself, try to make weight. And, you know, I did what I had to do at lightweight. I became a champion. I defended my belt once, you know, and I lost on my second title defense. And I tried to do it again. I lost to Ferguson in Mexico City. But I just reinventing myself. Become a better guy, a better fighter, and I still 33. I still have a couple more years to go strong, and I think fight to on this life is about motivation. Have to be motivated. I wasn't motivated at lightweight. Now I feel motivated on that new division.
Rafael, incredible journey throughout your career, and then like you said, reinventing yourself at 170. What would it mean to you to become the first Brazilian to capture belts in two different weight classes?
Yeah, that's my goal, man. Like I said, I still believe on it. I still believe I can make it. And it would be great, man. It would be great. I'm first Brazilian lightweight champion. And I'm looking forward to become a first Brazilian welterweight champion. And that's great for my legacy, you know. And, you know, I fight for my family. I fight for, you know, for my coaches, for me, for myself. And it'll be great, man. You know, I'm looking forward to it, to accomplish one more goal in my life.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So there you have it, Rafael Dos Anjos after his impressive performance this evening. Robbie Lawler, as you would expect, all class in defeat. He did show up to the post-fight press conference. Didn't want to make any excuses. The veteran that he is, the classy vet that he is, basically just said, listen, yeah, my knee was injured. I know when it happened, but that doesn't matter. I'm not going to tell you when it happened. I don't know what happened to it, but I know exactly when it happened. But I don't even want to go into it. Didn't want to make any excuses. Didn't want to take anything away from Rafael Dos Anjos. So tough loss for Robbie Lawler. You know, I think he's definitely still got some fights ahead of him. You know, I saw some people saying maybe that would be a good way to go out. But, I mean, the guy's still young. I mean, he's only 35 years old. And he's still fighting at a high level. I think, you know, being injured tonight certainly made it more difficult on him. But, you know, I think he's still got some fights ahead. And, again, I don't think he took, you know, too terribly much damage tonight where I'm worried about his safety or anything like that. So I think we'll still see some big fights from Robbie Lawler in the future. Hey, speaking of all class, how about the fine folks at Freshly, huh? By now, you know, we've been talking about them for a while. By now, you know about Freshly. Listen, it's the weekly prepared meal service that delivers fresh, never frozen meals to your front door. I'm telling you, I love it. I got my delivery earlier today. Makes life so much easy. Chef-inspired, chef-executed, fresh meals with all natural ingredients. What more could you want? What more could you want? No shopping for food. No chopping, no prep, no cleanup. I like to cook, but I sure do like somebody else doing it for me. They've got fantastic food made with all natural ingredients. Again, all natural, no artificial flavors, preservatives, no refined sugars, no gluten, none of that stuff. And it's easy. I'm telling you, man, if you're thinking about pulling the trigger on it, do it. I'm not trying to sell you something you don't need, but if you're thinking about food prep, use Freshly. Give them a shot. They're really, really good. Go to Freshly.com, type in the code ROADSHOW. That's all one word. They're going to give you $20 off the first 2 weeks. That's six meals a week for only $39. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Give it a shot. If you're in the market, this is the way to do it, I'm telling you. All right, co-main event, Josh Emmett. Wow. Wow. Crushing knockout of Ricardo Lamas. Man, this was fantastic. Josh Emmett came in and on short notice, took the challenge, didn't make weight, which he was very apologetic for. I think ultimately it cost him $50,000. He was not given a performance of the night bonus. And you got to think, had he made weight and gone in there and do what he did, just a huge counterpunch, leaving Ricardo Lamas out cold, you got to think that he would have picked up a $50,000 performance bonus. Didn't get it because he missed weight and, of course, was fined 30% of his purse as well. So the short-term financial issues for Josh Emmett are real. But, man, the long-term benefit of a victory like this, Josh Emmett is now on the map. Guy, you know, came in, former lightweight, cuts down to featherweight now, looks big at the weight class, looks powerful at the weight class. Man, just came out swinging, going for the fences with every opportunity. And Lamas was dealing with it well. Thought Lamas was doing a fantastic job of moving, you know, he's countering back. Just looked like he was in fine form. Looked like Ricardo Lamas was ready for the challenge. And, you know, I think things were going Ricardo Lamas' way. And then in one swoop, man, the big counter shot lands flush. And Ricardo Lamas out cold. Can't ask for a better night than that if you're Josh Emmett. Other than the $50,000 and your 30% of your purse back. But again, he's now on the map. Now, what this means is in far as what comes next for Josh Emmett, it's tough to say. I mean, the hard part about these fights when you come from nowhere and beat somebody in the very, very top of the weight class, you know, he was Ricardo Lamas was number 5 in the MMA junkie rankings. Does that mean you automatically get number 5? I mean, I think he was number 3. Lamas was number 3 in the UFC rankings. I know, you know, Emmett kept saying, I want that number 3 spot. I don't know if it works quite like that. I don't know if you can, you know, jump the line quite that far. But you definitely set yourself up for some big opportunities. You definitely set yourself up for some big fights coming forward. You know, we didn't have him, Emmett, anywhere close. We didn't have him on our honorable mentions. We didn't have him in the top 15. And I know, you know, Gorgeous George Garcia, host of MMA Junkie Radio, he's the one that kind of heads up the MMA Junkie rankings panel and system. You know, I know he always likes to talk about kind of slow in, slow out, so to speak, you know, gradual climbs. And so that makes it challenging. I mean, it really does make it challenging, because do you just swap a guy up there at number five? It's tough to say. It's tough to say. I don't think you put him up there that far, but, you know, you definitely, he is now on the radar. What a hell of a way to get your name known. Now, the flip side of that, Ricardo Lamas didn't have to take this fight, all right? And kudos to Josh Emmett for pointing that out repeatedly and saying, hey, I got all the respect in the world for this guy for taking the fight, because he didn't have to do it. You know, I missed weight. He could have very easily said, nah, I'm good, thanks anyway. But he took the fight, and then he paid the price. And it's really interesting, especially to happen on the same card as Tim Elliott. Of course, you know, Tim Elliott's opponent, Pietro Mingo, stepped in on short notice and missed weight. And Tim Elliott said, no, I'm not taking the fight. Even though UFC and the commission said that he could if he wanted to, Tim Elliott said, I'm not taking the fight. Now, I don't necessarily side with Tim Elliott in saying, you know, he's been very vocal since, saying, hey, I should get my full win bonus too. You know, I should get my show and win money. It's my opponent that didn't make weight. It's not me. I don't think I can necessarily agree with that. I think, you know, knowing that you get, if that was the standard that you want to set, and knowing that you keep your show and win bonus, then why would anybody take a fight when somebody misses weight? You know what I mean? Like, he misses weight by a pound. Sir, we can either give him 20%, you know, we can give you 20% of his show money and the fight goes on, or you can just cancel it and not do anything and you can get your show and win bonus. I mean, that, I just, logically, I don't think that makes sense. I think that's the whole point of why the fine is in place, is so, you know, how the fights will go on. I will say this, and I've said in the past, remember, that 20%, or in the case of, you know, Lamas, was 30%. Those aren't standards. I mean, there's kind of a running guideline, but they're not standards set in stone by the organization. So negotiate. Ask for more money. You know, if somebody misses significantly, ask for more money. But it does bring it into perspective, because maybe Tim Elliott made the right decision, especially if it gets booked right away. And I got to think, you know, unless it's like a – I mean, look, if you're in a title fight and pull something like that, the UFC is going to be pissed. If you're in a main event and you say, well, my opponent missed weight by 3 pounds, I'm not taking this fight. No question about it. The UFC is going to be pissed off at you. And they're not going to want to help you out. But when you're in a prelim and, you know, the guy does miss by 4 pounds, 5 pounds, and you know, I think fighters do have the right to say, I don't want to take this fight. And I think the UFC, for the most part, would agree with that. Again, unless it's their main event, unless it's a title fight, like, at that point, listen, they're going to be a little bit upset. There's no question about it. If you ruin a main event for them, even if it's not necessarily your fault, they're going to be a little frustrated. But I don't know. It's just interesting. You know, did Tim Elliott make the right decision by not taking the fight and only getting half his money? Or, you know, did Ricardo Lamas make the right decision by kind of keeping that the show must go on mentality, I'll fight whoever, you know, getting the 30%, negotiating for the extra money, but then suffering a big loss, suffering a key loss? It's interesting. I mean, Ricardo Lamas had every right to do the same thing Tim Elliott did. Say, hey, you know what? And it's tempting, right? I mean, can you imagine Ricardo Lamas just saying, you know what? Never mind. I'll take my show money. And then why don't you put me up against T-City? Put me up a fight in March in Vegas against Brian Ortega, and we'll call that a number one contenders fight. I mean, in retrospect, that might have been the way to do it. Such tough. It's easy in hindsight, right, to look back and say how things could have gone or should have gone or what have you. So just an interesting case study in how you handle a fighter that misses weight. So, anyway, big win for Josh Emmett. Again, if you weren't paying attention to this Team Alpha Male product, I bet you are now. Just an absolutely clean knockout. And all class on the microphone afterwards. Here's what he had to say at the post-fight press conference.
Hey Josh, right in front of you here. That was quite the knockout. I mean, just talk us through what you were seeing in there and how you were able to land, you know, such a clean shot on Ricardo.
Like I've been saying all night, man, that's Joey Rodriguez boxing at its finest. I've been working with my boxing coach for, you know, almost going on 5 years, and I've been working, just watching film with, you know, my coaches Felipe, Danny, Joey, and Uriah, and we've been breaking down Lamas's kind of style, and I've had two two teammates and a coach that have fought him. So that really played well into my favor as well. So I was hoping to lure him into my game, and that's just like an all-out brawl where I can roll and land punches, or if I could drag him in, coming in, I could catch him with that check hook. So he threw the leg kick. He was trying to beat up my the shins. It seems like everyone's trying to do that now, you know, since the Stevenson and Melendez fight, everyone's doing it. And so I ate that to throw overhand right, and then I just came back with that check hook and found the chin.
And he was down for a while after, you know, the punch landed. What's going through your mind at that point when, you know, he's not getting up for a few minutes after the knockout?
Yeah, it's a little tough to watch. You know, afterwards I was really excited that I got the win, of course. But then when I see him down there still and, you know, he has a wife and kids and, you know, just his family's here. So, like, I wish that on nobody. So it's kind of, I don't know, I can't really celebrate too much when I see something like that.
When we spoke to you earlier this week, you seemed pretty confident you were going to make the weight, you know, on short notice. Obviously, that didn't happen. Can you just tell us where things went wrong during the weight cut?
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was just that three-week notice. I guess I can't take short notice fights like that. I'll take 4 to 5 weeks out. So like I said before, I apologize for not making them weight. I was right on track, and then it was just with the time frame I had left, I knew there was no possible way that I could make it within that time. I just stopped sweating. I didn't have enough time to water load. I just messed up, but I take full credit for that, and it won't happen again.
There you go. And last thing from me, just where do you go from here? You just knocked out, you know, top three guy, former title challenger. How do you, you know, one up this one going forward?
My goal is to be a world champion. So I one up that when I get that title around my waist. But I don't know. I knew I could go in there. I would beat him. I knew I could, if I just one punch, like I've been saying, and, you know, a lot of these naysayers and haters out there, like, I guess you never landed a clean punch in the UFC yet, but hey, I guess I found it today.
Josh, when we spoke earlier on in the week, I know it's a little cliche to compare, you know, a fighter story to Rocky, especially in this sport, but you did bring it up, you know, short notice, you know, perhaps relatively unknown to the masses, but did it all come out and play out in fruition in terms of that kind of story that you had in your mind comparing it to Rocky?
Yeah, of course. You know, I was the underdog going into this. So I said, hey, this is a real life Rocky story right here. And who doesn't love the underdog? You know, so a lot of people would be cheering for me and rooting for me, of course. And it'll be a true rags to riches American dream when I get that title around my waist.
Did the fact that, obviously, you know, you missed weight, did it take the edge off the win or the performance for you personally?
For me, man, that was when I knew I wasn't going to make the weight, and I was working so hard to do it. We were going to keep going, but it was my coach's call. They kind of saw what I was going through. I wasn't sweating. They knew it wasn't going to work out, so it was their call. They said, hey, let's stop now. You're not going to make the weight. And to me, man, I was disappointed. That's the first time I've ever missed weight, and I've wrestled since I was a little kid, wrestled through college, all my fights, I've never missed weight. So it almost felt like a loss to me. Like I was really disappointed. I didn't even want to go in, you know, the weigh-ins from 9 to 11. We figured this out about 9:30. I was like, can we at least wait? But we went in there and we weighed in at 9:30, and I just felt, man, I don't know, I was just so disappointed, more disappointed than anybody. And like I said, it won't happen again.
Something else we spoke about on Media Day was the idea that typically ranked fighters are looking ahead, you know, and for unranked fighters, it's really hard to get an opportunity to fight someone with a number next to their name, let alone someone in the top five. Mm. So given that, you know, Ricardo, you know, gave this opportunity for you, would you perhaps entertain a rematch with him where you can put in a full camp and give him an opportunity to perhaps, you know, get one back?
Oh, of course. You know, he did this for me. He didn't have to take this fight. You know, he's one of the best guys in the world. It was risky for him. You know, he could sit back and he could probably wait for Edgar Holloway fight and then get, you know, get a title shot or fight Ortega and the winner of that get a title fight. So I'm truly grateful for him accepting the fight, and then as well as even with me missing the weight, he still took it. I had to give up 30% of my purse, so that's more than normal. So that's you know, I think I paid the price for that, and I got excluded from the performance bonuses. But you know, if there's a exception that the UFC or Dana White can do, I'll gladly take that $50,000 bonus. And you know what I mean? It's Christmas coming up. My wife and I, we're about to, a week from today, we'll be landing in Rome to visit my brother in the military. Hey, I wanted to, you know, take him out as well because he's going to show us around, and we're going to one of his award ceremonies because he's getting out of the military soon, and he's done some good things. So I'm excited to be out there with my wife and my brother, and just have a great time.
And the final one from me. The Canadian fans are a special breed. Can you just sum up your experience here this week in Winnipeg and also being able to fight in front of them tonight here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, they were great. You know, the Canadian fans, it reminds me a little bit of the European fans. You know, they're like super fans. They're in the arena's packed, all sold out the first fight. You know, they're just super respectful, and I've had a great time in Winnipeg despite the cold. You know, and a lot of people from Winnipeg are like, "Oh, it's warm out here." You know, I'm like, "This is not warm. It's 8 degrees." Like. But then that's when they're talking. It's usually negative 40 or 30 or something like that. But when we left Sacramento, man, it was 52 degrees, and I was like, "This is cold." And man, it shocked me when I got off the plane. All righty.
Thank you, Josh.
Gotta respect Josh Emmett, willing to give the rematch if that's something that was in the cards. I don't think it necessarily makes sense to go back and revisit this fight, but I like his attitude, man. I like Emmett's attitude, and again, all class in the way he handled himself as well. And Ricardo Lamas, again, does deserve a lot of respect for taking this fight when he definitely didn't have to. He definitely didn't have to. All right, so kind of a weird choice in co-main event, but I think that worked out perfect. I think the fight that, you know, we talked about going in that I thought was, you know, was the people's co-main event, if it will. Santiago Ponzinibbio picks up a decision win over Mike Perry. Good Lord, man, how fantastic was that? You know, just a fun fight. Lived up to everything that we thought it would be and more, other than maybe we just didn't get a finish. You know, I think we probably thought this was going to have some kind of a violent end, and it didn't. But because of that, I think we ended up getting even more fun out of it. I mean, these two dudes were going at it for 15 minutes. It was funny how everybody – I mean, the Chase Sherman the Chase Sherman tweet where he says, you know, if this fight goes the distance, I'll let Francis Ngannou hit me square in the face with my hands tied behind my back. He recanted on that, as you can imagine. This was a fun fight, man. Santiago Ponzinibbio does pick up the decision win. Gut check for him late. Absolute gut check for him late. You know, I thought, you know, both guys started to slow a little bit towards the end, and understandably so. The pace had been high from start to finish, and, you know, Santiago Ponzinibbio just dug a little bit deeper and was able to take this fight to the ground, which was huge, a big takedown late. And you could just see Mike Perry was exhausted and, you know, just got absolutely you know, just ended up holding on basically instead of really working for the sweep or the escape to get back to his feet. And I think that was just a matter of sheer exhaustion at that point. And understandably so. You know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we need to worry about cardio issues or concerns. I mean, the dude is definitely a strong, muscular guy that puts power in everything he throws. So, yeah, to some degree, I think when fights go late, it's always going to be a little bit more difficult for him. But, you know, this wasn't something that made me question, is this going to be, you know, a weakness of his in the future? I mean, this was a high-paced fight. It really was. And just an impressive performance by Santiago Ponzinibbio. Both these guys showing an impressive chin, man. There was some back-and-forth trading. Again, just lived up to everything we wanted to be. Both guys getting beat up. Enough so that Santiago Ponzinibbio, I mean, you know, marked up face, bruised up, didn't even make it to the post-fight press conference. You know, he had to be transported for precautionary reasons, and understandably so. I mean, any time a victorious fighter isn't able to show up at the post-fight press conference, you know he's been through an absolute war. But this was a lot of fun. I picked Mike Perry coming in this fight. I have to say, you know, part of that I think is just I'm a Mike Perry fan. He's he's just so fun to talk to, and he's fun to watch fight. I mean, the whole, gosh, the weight cutting Q&A that he had from inside the portable sauna, and you know, freestyle rapping to Jingle Bell Rock and talking trash. I mean, just a lot of fun. Everything about the guy I've been a fan of watching his growth in the UFC. And I think there's some, you know, big fights ahead of Mike Perry as well. I mean, that guy's not going anywhere. He's got star quality. There's no question about it. His fighting style is fun. There's big fights ahead, no problem. Hell, I mean, does Mike Perry and Robbie Lawler make sense now? I mean, they're both coming off losses. Is that a fight anybody would have a problem signing up for? Not me. I'm in. You know, maybe Robbie Lawler would look at that as something that was a little too far down the ladder for him. And that's no disrespect to Mike Perry. I mean, Robbie Lawler's been doing this forever. But stylistically, that'd be a hell of a fight. But Ponzinibbio, man, he is the real deal. He proved it. He proves it time and time again. And, you know, after that big knockout of Gunnar Nelson early this year, and now you've got a big win over Mike Perry. And, you know, it wasn't really called a grudge match. It was, you know, it's just a Mike Perry fight. And Ponzinibbio, how about the work on the mic by John Anik afterwards? I thought the move of the fight there was John Anik's MVP move of getting out of the cage. But, you know, I like Santiago Ponzinibbio saying, hey, you know, give me a title fight. Give me an interim title fight. And I don't think that's necessary. I don't find it necessary at all, to be honest with you. I don't think, and I think Tyron Woodley has said it as well. He's like, listen, man, yes, I'm going to be sidelined for a little bit, but, you know, I'm one of the most active guys in the sport. So I don't think an interim title fight makes sense, but I do think a big fight makes sense. I mean, you know, a fight with Wonderboy? That's somebody that's still up there a little bit. A fight with Colby Covington, maybe. That's somebody that is higher up the ranks and, you know, could be kind of that backup number one contender fight. You know, maybe if Kamaru Usman ends up proving victorious in St. Louis, you do something there. But, you know, definitely some big fights on the horizon for Ponzinibbio. And I thought this was just an impressive performance. Hell of a fight. Maybe I thought maybe a fight of the night candidate, but I'm always kind of glad when they go with the guys lower down the card. You know, not that these two guys couldn't have used the money, but I think when the prelim guys get that extra $50K, it's life-changing. The night's Fox main card kicked off with Glover Teixeira picking up a first-round win over Misha Cirkunov. Impressive fight here by Glover Teixeira. The guy's still dangerous even at his age. You know, he said, listen, I'm kind of the old guy in the bunch. You know, I'm 38 years old now. I get it. I got to prove myself. But, you know, I thought he proved that he still does belong at the top of the light heavyweight heap. He's still as dangerous as anybody in the division. I had picked Glover Teixeira coming into this fight. I don't mean this as any kind of a knock on Misha Cirkunov. I'm not sold yet against the top guys. I'm not quite sold yet. And I think Glover Teixeira showed some of those weaknesses tonight. You know, I didn't know if this was that fight. You know, it's famously said in the fight game, you know, one day you just show up and you're old, and it's a noticeable difference. And, you know, I didn't know, is this going to be the time that that happens to Glover Teixeira? You know, coming off that, that you know, tough loss to Alexander Gustafsson, you know, was this going to be the night that he showed up looking old? And listen, Cirkunov was having some success on the feet early. No question about it, man. I thought he was really starting to roll a little bit and to get a little bit of momentum. But Glover Teixeira wisely took the fight to the floor, you know, showed his well-rounded skills, man. The guy has got some submission abilities and thought it might be able to get the fight done there. But wasn't quite able to get the finish on the ground via the submission. So just turned to his strikes, and you can see he had the hooks in. He had everything trapped and just absolutely pummeled Misha Cirkunov to get the finish. Immediately came over to Daniel Cormier, who was doing the commentating, and said, listen, man, you told me I could get a shot at this, and I think I deserve it. And, man, it's crazy, right? But he kind of does. He's kind of up there at the top. I mean, we still got him as number six in our light heavyweight rankings. You know, I don't know if he'll move up or not. You know, I can kind of see this being one of those situations where, you know, Alexander Gustafsson we have right in front at number five. You know, how do you jump past him when you just lost the head-to-head matchup? But, you know, in our light heavyweight ranking, we got at 3 and 4 guys fighting in Bellator. So that's Ryan Bader and Phil Davis. So Volkan Ozdemir has the title shot next. You know, does Glover Teixeira maybe have one more fight? You know, maybe he fights Jimmy Manoa, maybe, you know, and that's maybe not necessarily a number one contender fight, but, you know, the backup fight, so to speak. Maybe that fight would make some sense. Or maybe Glover Teixeira just sits around and waits. I don't know, but he proved he's still dangerous. And he says, listen, you know, I know the end is coming, but I think I've got one more title run left in me, and this might be it. So we'll see. Preliminary card was capped off by Jan Blachowicz picking up the decision win over Jared Cannonier. Blachowicz just looked good, man. His jab was there. He's a guy that sometimes I think looks, if I'm being honest, sometimes I think he looks slow. And I didn't think he looked that way tonight. I thought his jab was just super slick, man. You know, he said he could have thrown the right hand a little bit more behind it, and that's true. But, you know, I thought he put together combinations enough to be effective, and I thought the jab was great. And, you know, Cannonier, I think, is somebody that's improving. This was a big test for him. This was a big step up for Cannonier. I'm a fan of Cannonier, man. I love his personality. But, you know, he's struggled against the upper echelon of the division. And, you know, I think this was kind of one of those growing pains type of fights for Jared Cannonier. You know, who's no spring chicken, but is still fairly early in his career. And I think he'll continue to improve. Cannonier in the past has talked about the fact that he can make 185 pounds. I don't know if that's still the case. It does seem like it'd be a tough cut for him. But tonight, man, you could definitely see the difference. Blachowicz is one of those big, bad 205-pounders, and you could really see the difference in there. And I think if Cannonier can get down to 185 pounds, I'd like to see it. You know, assuming it's not going to just make him absolutely, you know, miserable, you know, one of those, you know, kidney-threatening weight cuts. But he said before he thinks he can do it. So I think tonight proved that, you know, maybe that would be a nice move for him. Julian Marquez and Darren Stewart got the evening's fight of the night bonus. Fun fight, man. Marquez is making some waves on his way into the UFC, isn't he? Had that beautiful knockout of Phil Haas on Dana White's Contender Series 4 back in August. Just that perfectly timed, crushing head kick. Man, what a hell of a highlight that was against Phil Haas, who's you know, long time been, you know, the prospect that can't miss. And Marquez comes in, knocked him out, and then comes in tonight and just goes toe-to-toe with them. Puts on a damn show. How can you not be a fan? Dancing on his way to the cage, had a, you know, just relaxed as can be, you know, a Tyson Pedro-esque walk out to the cage, and then goes in there and just bangs it out with Darren Stewart, just toe-to-toe trading, can't get any more exciting than that, and then ultimately chokes him unconscious with the guillotine choke. I mean, what more can you say? You know, I don't know what Julian Marquez's upside is. I don't know, you know, where he'll ultimately land and you know, how far he can go. But I tell you what, he's looked good so far. You know, guy is made the journey, you know, fought in Bellator, fought in LFA, fought in the Contender Series. Now he's in the UFC. He's a showman. His style is fun. I mean, what's there not to like? And, you know, Dana White says, I'm a fan as well. So, you know, that helps. When the boss of the organization says, I'm a fan, That's a good guy to have on your side. So super impressed by him tonight. And, you know, tough luck for Darren Stewart. Darren Stewart has had some rough goes in the UFC. And I think, you know, after a kind of a wild start, I think, you know, he's probably done at this point. So he's had some good fights, but just haven't gone his way. It's nice to pick up that $50,000 bonus, but I think he's probably going to be back on the regional stage trying to tighten things up. But meanwhile, Julian Marquez, man, seems like somebody to keep an eye on. If nothing else, he's damn fun to watch fight. Hey, by the way, I should say, if you like what you're hearing, do us a favor. Go into iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to us, all right? Take a second. Go in there and give us a rating. Review us. Leave us some feedback. Love reading those comments when I can. But it also helps us out. It helps the algorithms behind the scene that help us get known. Of course, hey, if you got some friends that are fans, make sure and tell them about our show as well, and have them subscribe and rate and review and do all that good stuff. Do it. Help us out. Damn it. Chad Laprise picked up a TKO win over Galor Bafondo. I mean, what can you say? Galor Bafondo, so fun to watch fight, man. I mean, the guy is creative and unpredictable and quick and powerful, but it's obviously he's still raw. You know, he's still very much a raw product that needs finish, but the dude certainly has all the raw materials in place, and he's fun to watch fight, and he's dangerous. And Chad Laprise found that out early on, getting dropped with a combination, but popped up right away. Very impressed. Got back to his feet, and then just methodically picked his opponent apart until he basically got him out, and you could see that Glover had basically no idea how to get out of that position, if we're being honest. He was just absolutely trapped, and the punches came nonstop, and he was ultimately finished at 4-10 of the first round. Chad Laprise quietly now on a 3-fight winning streak with all three by way of finish. All three by way of TKO, and now 6-2 in the UFC. So a guy that's making some waves, a guy that's doing some big things, a guy that's very quiet about, you know, going and doing the business, but he's getting it done. I'll still tune in to watch Bafondo moving forward. He's fun. Nordin Tlaib picked up the quick finish of Danny Roberts. Danny Roberts was not happy about the finish, but I think there was no question about it. This fight was done. I thought the stoppage was just here. You know, the head kick came, and then the big right hand afterwards, and this fight was done in just 59 seconds. Good performance by Nordin Tlaib. Funny because Danny Roberts came out, and it was Danny Roberts who actually threw the first high kick and just missed. And what a completely different story it could have been. And then it's Nordin that comes back and scores his own head kick, as he said, you know, lucky in some ways. You know, he said it's a 1 in 1,000 type deal. And it was lucky of him to land. And then, of course, the big right hand came behind. It didn't exactly land flush, but it was flush enough to get the job done. Nordin, the funny side story there, he's working security for Neymar now, one of the most famous soccer players in the world. You got to think Neymar gets a kick out of watching that fight with his boys, right? Saying, that's my badass security guard. How about that? But a great performance there by Nordin Tlaib. But again, I had no problem with the stoppage. I understand Danny Roberts' frustration. Of course, you know, you don't know what's going through a guy's head in the moment. I mean, are they even thinking straight? You know, at this point, if you talk to Danny Roberts, would he protest or would he say, nah, I'm good. I totally understand. You know, at this point, after he's recovered a little bit and had a chance to watch it, he might not even protest anymore. So don't fault him at all for protesting, but I had no problem with the stoppage. Tough go for Danny Roberts. I mean, a guy that had a lot of hype behind him, was getting a little buzz on the scene over there in England. Of course, he lost to Mike Perry late last year, came back and picked up a win earlier this year, and now, you know, falls to 1-2 in his last three. And it's funny how fast those turnarounds can happen. You know, had all the buzz, and now 1-2 and kind of in desperate need of a win coming out next time. So, man, that's a tough thing about this fight game. John McDessie, the unanimous decision win over Abel Trujillo. Abel Trujillo had promised to bring the violence. You know, you heard him on the broadcast referencing the MMA Junkie interview where, you know, he had come out saying he was you know, gonna get this thing done early. You know, was going to go out there and was going to be violent. And just lacked a little something tonight. You know, I don't know. I wasn't impressed by the performance. You know, I thought we'd see a little bit more aggression out of him. You know, I think we saw the most aggression at the end of the fight when you had a little bit of a dust-up between him and McDessie. McDessie was frustrated and said, come on, man, you know, show some respect. This is martial arts. But overall, just kind of a disappointing performance from Abel Trujillo. Who promised to, you know, to rebound nicely from his February loss, said he was in the, you know, best shape that he's ever been in, and felt like he was going to do something special, and just wasn't there tonight. You know, big emotional win for John McDessie. I thought it was cool. You know, he talked about you know, relocating to Rufus Sport really kind of saved his career. How he had lost a lot of confidence, man. So much of this is a mental game. I think that's what sometimes people forget behind the scenes, man. This, so much of this is a mental game, and man, these fighters, they even question themselves sometimes, you know. And when you have a couple losses, all of a sudden you don't quite have the confidence that you once did, and you don't quite have the swagger that you once did, and you're second guessing yourself, and you're questioning yourself. And that's no way to step into a cage. That's why, you know, when people call fighters cocky, you know, I can't fault a guy. You know, if you're going to lock yourself in a cage with another human being hell-bent on you, doing you damage, man, be cocky, you know? Be as confident as you possibly can. So, you know, pretty cool for McDessie to open up like that. Alessio De Chirico picked up the $50,000 bonus for his knockout of Oluwole Bangbos with the second round knee strike to the face, saving what was a rather boring fight up to that point, to be honest with you. It had been very slow and just not much happening. You know, I was kind of doing the recap for it, and that's what I wasn't doing play-by-play tonight. I was actually writing up all the post-fight recaps. And, you know, I said it was probably savvy work by both guys. De Chirico wanted to fight in the center of the cage, and so he didn't want to be pulled out to the edge there where Bengbos had set up. And Bengbos, for his part, was kind of refusing to engage. You know, both guys were basically just kind of refusing to play into the other guy's game plan, and that's okay. I mean, that's smart fighting, but it started to get pretty listless pretty quick, and the crowd was definitely not into it. And De Chirico finally started to press the action a little bit, and I thought did a fantastic job, got into the clinch and landed that big knee, and man, you know, interesting, you know, picked up the performance of the night bonus for basically a few seconds worth of work, because there was nothing about that performance before that was very entertaining at all. But good for De Chirico, because that was a pretty fantastic knockout. Maybe he can buy Josh Emmett a couple of beers tonight at the bar, because I think he wouldn't have got that $50,000 if Emmett had made weight. No question about that. Hell, maybe even, I don't know if Laprise would have been a contender for it, but still, I think if Josh Emmett doesn't, you know, makes weight, De Chirico doesn't get to catch that $50,000 bonus. But still, good work from De Chirico. Okay, De Chirico, the Italian, you know, contender. He's 2-2 in the UFC now. You know, can he help move the card? You know, he's not in a position yet where he can headline the card. But y'all always think, I mean, the UFC's always wanted to get to Italy. You know, maybe the motivation is a little less so now that the Fertittas aren't there. Of course, that was, you know, a big thing for them, was they wanted to compete in Italy. But you know, I don't know if you guys saw that, but Bellator quietly announced, you know, they're going to Rome. They've done a couple of cards already in some of the smaller cities in Italy, and they're going to Rome next summer. It's a bummer, because I think it's during International Fight Week, because I would love to have an excuse to go to Rome to cover an event, and I don't think that's going to happen, because I think it's going to be during International Fight Week. Now, Bellator, when they go over there, they basically do half MMA, half kickboxing cards, and you know, I think that's the model right there. You know, kickboxing is a lot more popular in Italy than MMA is right now, so they have to split up the card a little bit. The UFC doesn't have the ability to do that, so you know, that may be one reason they still feel like Italy's not a good market for them yet. But you always wonder when you get these guys again. You know, in no way is De Chirico in a position where he could headline a fight night or anything like that at this point. But when you see guys hailing from a country that's an expansion market, and you see them pick up, you know, a key win here or there, you know there's possibilities for them in the future. So just something to monitor, something to keep an eye on. That's a market I know the UFC has always wanted to get to, and one of the few that they still haven't, that, you know, that could be a good one. One card on the Fight Pass prelims, Jordan Meehan picked up a unanimous decision win over Eric Silva. Jordan Meehan, I thought he looked great. You know, here's a guy. You know, you talk about fighters saying something pre-fight and then not delivering on it. Jordan Meehan had an interview with Mike Bond where, you know, he basically said, listen, I need to go in there like I'm willing to die. You know, I got to give everything I have to win. You know, he's like, my comeback has been terrible, and I need to, you know, I need a win desperately. And he got it, man, and I thought he looked fantastic over Eric Silva. Best Jordan Meehan we've seen in a while. Clean sweep of the cards over Eric Silva. And Eric Silva, man, I mean, came to the UFC with so much hope and potential back in 2011, and you know, has had moments of brilliance here and there. It does look capable of doing you know, great things at times, but you know, he's now 1-4 in his past five. That's not good. It's not good at this level. He's 33. You know, they're doing less Brazil shows. This is not the era of doing seven, you know, Brazil events a year. This is the era of three. And you know, is Eric Silva still a draw? This was the first fight of the night. You know, I don't know. Could he be gone? I think very possibly. And I hate to ponder somebody's future like that, but just looked kind of flat tonight. Looked kind of flat tonight. And don't want to take anything away from Jordan Meehan, who looked great. But I don't know. This could be the end of Eric Silva. Crazy. I just think about all the hype that was around Eric Silva. You know, he was going to be the next big Brazilian thing. And then to think where he's at now really is kind of wild, man. It shows how things can change. And, you know, being hyped the next big thing doesn't necessarily always guarantee success. So anyway, all right, well, listen, I wasn't in Winnipeg, so I don't have a lot of behind the scenes action for you. And I'd love to get a little something from Cole Coffey, but my man is working hard to finish the work that he's still got to do. I was in communication with him on WhatsApp up there in Winnipeg, and he's still grinding away trying to get done with everything they had. So, unfortunately, he's not going to chime in tonight, but he'll be back in town next week. And kind of a slow week next week, right? There's not any events, you know, with the holiday coming up. Obviously, it doesn't make sense to do events the week of Christmas Eve. So, it's an open week on the schedule. So, who knows? We can do something kind of fun for the show. We won't have a lot of direct MMA to talk about, but we'll figure out something. Maybe we'll try to get together with a guest or two, or do something kind of special fun. I'll talk to him about that once he gets back in town. Once he warms up a little bit, man. I saw the pictures up there. It did not look fun. I heard the arena is amazing in Winnipeg. Not a huge crowd tonight. Tickets weren't amazing. Did just over $1 million at the gate in Canadian dollars, which is $781,000 U.S. 8862 was the attendance. Again, not bad for a fight night, but not great. And especially, you know, Canada being the great market that it is, you would expect something a little better. I guess it was just, I don't know. I thought the card ended up being good. I thought it had a lot of meaningful fights on it. Just maybe the fact that it was so damn cold, man. People didn't want to get out. And again, close to holidays, maybe they just don't have the money to spend. So anyway, not a failure for the UFC, but not a home run. And it definitely ended up being a fun night on TV. So anyway, all right, well, listen. Like I said, I wasn't there. I was watching from my office, so I had the same view you did on TV. So no insight from me. Those are just my thoughts. Hopefully they're still entertaining to you. Thanks for listening.